Well, hello everybody again. This is yours truly, working now on the 15th program of our Egoic Lotus Webinar Commentaries book. It's really a webinar book. I have been working in this way now for some years, thinking that it is more expedient and maybe in the long run valuable to present these books in spoken form. You know, maybe writing gives you exactitude of thought, but I will try to be as exact as I can under the circumstances. Lately we've been showing the picture of the Egoic Lotus. This is one that is colored in by my wife, Tuya, and with some, I think, important corrections to the one which was previously done by other groups. Both valuable, of course, but this one shows, I think, the seventh petal in the correct position and substitutes the color rose for red, which we find does not really appear in the Egoic Lotus under the colors. We have been gathering material which will be of value when we proceed to an analysis of the lotus petal by petal. There are so many things to relate to this emblem of human evolution, this symbol of human evolution. This flower on the higher mental plane has been with us since individualization, whether on this globe or on the moonchain or in the previous solar system, different methods of individualization, of course, and its unfoldment is the exact key to the stage of evolution that we have achieved. There is astrology in all of this. There is rheology. There is psychology. There is the magical process. So many things that the Tibetan wrote about can be considered in relation to the Egoic Lotus. Right now, I'd like to take an important section, which I covered before when I did esoteric astrology, but this in a different way, perhaps, more related to the tiers and to the petals. We have on page 517 of Esoteric Astrology a discussion of the exoteric planets for average man and the rays they convey, of course, and the esoteric planets for the disciple or initiate. And I think it's really important to have these astrological fundamentals as we proceed with our analysis of the process of the opening of the Egoic Lotus. The head center, interestingly enough, is ruled by Pluto, which is apparently a non-sacred first-ray planet, but also an esoteric planet from certain perspectives. Certainly, very little is known about it. There's an attempt to demote Pluto to a planetoid, but anybody who's had Pluto active in the chart knows it is a force, an energy to be reckoned with. But Pluto had this helmet of invisibility in mythology, and it did relate to the head. There's another way in which Pluto finds itself related to the head. There's a triangle called Aries, Pluto, Shambhala. Aries, the zodiacal sign which rules the head, Shambhala, the head center of our planet, and then Pluto. So it is a fairly cerebral planet. Its first-ray quality, of course, relates it to the head, and I think it has qualities along the 3-5 line in the higher aspects of its structure in its energy system. It's hard to say what the final ray of Pluto will be, but it seems to relate much to the fifth and third rays. It's involved in a great deal of research. There's certainly not much head center activity in the beginning of the process of human evolution. The head center is there, and like all the chakras, it glows with a dim light. The light of the lower chakras to be increased first, and the head center probably one of the last here. But also, we don't only have to look for Pluto at the head center, we can find it at the base of the spine. And even though the rays 7 and 4 have been associated with the base of the spine, ray 1 is here for its sustaining power to keep the man, the projection of the soul, in incarnation. So it fits very well at the base of the spine, and it is a life-giving force. We have to remember that Pluto is a healing planet. It's said to be the healer with the power of the serpent, very related to the sustaining serpent power. And because the base of the spine is connected with the etheric body, then Pluto must be as well. Although when you think about his rulership over the mythological hell and DK's statement that our lower dense physical plane is hell itself, what other kind of hell is there? Of course, there are astral hells and imagistic hells, that kind of thing, but that our life in the lower three worlds, and especially on the dense physical plane, is hell. I think there's a Norwegian word, I'll probably mispronounce it, but the idea is hellid, the idea of frozen, frozen in place. And there is a place in Norway called Hell, Norway, with a greeting card saying, "Welcome to Hell." But Pluto has this quality of relating to the moon and to the dense physical nature, and since for a long time it was considered the outermost planet of our familiar planets, it is analogous to the rind of the human being, the dense physical body, the outer sheath, which is not really a principle and is, in a sense, because it is not a principle, to be eventually rejected, and Pluto, the planet of rejection. So there's a lot to do with this first petal of the egoic lotus. None of the colors of Pluto are really showing up. I imagine it would be kind of a dark red color, you know, black or dark red. Of course, black is not found in the egoic lotus. It would simply mean the absence of quality. It fits in this very trying work of the first petal in which man is newly incarnated and is trying to come to terms with the new environment in which he finds himself and in which survival, life, and death are issues, hence Pluto. Pluto trying to keep him alive and keep him surviving with all of the antagonistic animals of the time. DK has told us how many lives of early man were lost to the animal kingdom, and some of the meat-eating that's going on today is part of the karmic repayment of that in the animal kingdom. The next center down is the Ajna Center, and for both the developed and average human being, we have Venus as the ruler. Venus is a planet of integration. It's a magnetic planet. It draws to a center, and hence its association with individualization, drawing the diffuse consciousness of early man or early animal man or just the animal that became man, drawing that to a center which eventually will be recognized as the I, just as one would look in the mirror or looking glass, which is oftentimes modeled on the glyph of Venus. They are very closely related, identical in many cases. For the average man, the Ajna Center will mean the beginning of the integration of the personality, and Venus, with its ray 5, will be related, of course, to the fifth petal. At least we can go to 7, I suppose, and once we get beyond 7, we'll have to see about how the rays are related. Obviously, different rays are related to every petal, and it's pretty clear that every one of the 7 rays will be found functioning in relation to every petal, because people are going to be born in and under every sign of the zodiac, in all the petals. Whether or not those signs respond to their highest potential, in the early days they do not, but still there's no reason to think that people in the early days will not be born in every sign of the zodiac. So the Ajna Center really is going to come into play for average man at the fourth petal, and increasingly in the fifth. This is when personality integration really begins to occur. Occurring under Cancer in the fourth petal, and coming to a climax of display in the fifth petal. Venus having much to do with the Sun, which generically rules that fifth petal, the Sun being the sign of it's the planet of the integrated personality. It's also the planet, we're calling the Sun a planet in astrology, the luminary, let us say, which indicates the higher self. And Venus also will indicate not only the integration of the personality, but the growth of the higher self in this fifth petal. So it has an important function there. It's not the ultimate function, but the higher self comes into increasing influence there. And the Ajna Center can be active in a new form of personality integration that we would undertake when we discuss the techniques of integration, and Venus would be prominent. The throat center in this case is ruled by Earth, not Saturn, not Uranus. Earth is a third ray planet from the personality point of view, and we would have it that when does the throat center begin? Well, man probably begins his process of speech fairly early on, and the throat center is stimulated in that way. All throughout the Hall of Ignorance, there is the third ray tendency to the production of forms. We're not really talking about intellect here, but we are talking about the practical mind and the production of many forms. We could relate this to the first petal. Generally, the centers below the diaphragm are the ones that are going to be stimulated, but Earth also has a relationship to the center at the base of the spine, which continues its importance all the way through and is a sustaining force in the beginning. And Earth is related to the etheric body, he tells us in esoteric astrology, and that relationship to the etheric body is part of the sustaining quality of life in dense physical form. We can't really say that for the average man the energy of the sacral center is rising to the throat. We cannot say that the energy of the base of the spine is rising to the top of the head, not yet. But the throat center is active in the production of many forms, and even when we think about the tendency to create beauty in the second petal, the tendency to create forms which reveal beauty of some kind. The earth can be there with its form production tendencies. Also, the idea of procreation of many forms is found in earth, and so in the first petal, the second petal, it will be found. Does it have much to do with the growth of intellect? Well, maybe of a practical kind. It has a Ray 3 personality. It's the objective of earth is the production of light, a great station of light, but we cannot look at the earth as a indicator of intellectuality the way we would Mercury, or of the fusion of intellect and love as we would with Venus. But in terms of the production of many forms in the hall of ignorance, forms of different kinds at different stages, the earth can be involved, and the mind found at the resonating to the throat center can be involved in that. We also have to remember that there's a third ray component to the sacral center, because it is the home also of the lower, of the mental elemental, that would mean lower mind. So I've often wondered whether we cannot find a way to place earth and its fecundity of forms in the sacral center, or related to the sacral center as well. The third ray is to be found there. The moon as well in relation to the sacral center, Mars certainly, and when DK gives Uranus as the ruler of the sacral center, well, it's a pretty high ruler. I think there are some other planets associated there. Certainly Mars, since it rules sexuality in general. But Earth is pretty active in its third ray manner in the hall of ignorance, and whatever it does evoke from the throat center is more in terms of creating of sounds and word forms, and also procreation in the sacral center. And I think that the average human being doesn't use his throat center to necessarily good intellectual purpose. It is the place where language is expressed, and there the creation of many forms somewhat randomly is occurring here. We have to remember that we are discussing the average man and not just the primitive man. So many things are said in the throat center, and they are true, they are false, they are in between. They are not really the plan-inspired use of the throat center the way we would have under Saturn, which rules the atmic plane and the plan. The heart center, maybe it's no surprise to see the sun, and the vitality is sustained by the sun. The heart center is not only the center of love, it's the center of life, and life is expressed through vitality. The sun is a great second ray luminary. Its personality presently is that of the second ray. Its soul is also that of the second ray. There's a probable fourth ray monad on one level of the sun. Its color yellow probably reveals that, but ultimately, since the final monadic ray has to be 1, 2, or 3, we would presume, then it's probably going to be an ultimate second ray, sort of a 2, 2, 2. Well, I can't say ultimately 2, 2, 2, but ultimately at least 2, 2, and then we would have the Ray 1 personality for the sun in the next solar system. Would there be a red sun? I mean, there are such. Was the previous sun a green sun? There are such. Anyway, it's ruling the heart center, as that center must be active even for the average human being. We saw that once we got beyond the pranic triangle, we we're looking at man controlled from the astral plane. The heart center was there. Man controlled from the mental plane, the heart center was there. And on, the heart center stayed there. So the sun, at least for a couple of those phases of average man, has to be prominent. Do we necessarily mean that this will be the fifth petal for average man? Well, it's kind of hard to be average man and reach the fifth petal. By the time we reach the fifth petal, we are a man who has really achieved. So I tend to look at this more in terms of the lunar petals rather than the solar petals. And how I divide them is that the first four petals are lunar, ending with Cancer ruled by the moon, and the next five petals, beginning with Leo and the sun, are considered solar because they are related to the unfoldment of the presence of the solar angel as the angel of the presence in the constitution of man. The unfoldment of that angel, the reception and expression, incorporation of the quality of that angel. So I don't look at the sun here connected particularly with the fifth petal, because I think by the time we reach the fifth petal, we are really beginning to integrate the personality. Now, does average man begin to do that? Well, to the extent that he does, we could talk about this type of sun in the heart center in relation to the fifth petal. And of course, the heart is an organ of integration. It's not only an organ of love. It's possible for those who are not on the spiritual path to use the heart center as a method of cohering, gathering, and holding together those that they inspire. Maybe in a lower way, or excite, maybe that would be the word. With regard to the solar plexus center and Mars, well, yes, of course, we will have Mars very active in the outer tier of petals. As a matter of fact, I sometimes think of that outer tier as entirely a Martian tier, ruled by red and to some degree, rose. But when I think of the rose color, I tend to think more of Neptune. I often think of the second tier of petal, the love petals of the astral plane, ruled by Venus, and the third tier, ruled by Mercury, whose color is yellow, and the yellow shows up all the time in those petals. The color of Venus is rose, or at least it's one of its prominent colors. Maybe indigo is another color, and also orange. But I tend to think of Venus characteristically and generically ruling the second tier and Mars the entire first tier. So Mars is more than the solar plexus. Mars ruling sexuality as it does is connected with the sacral center, and Mars is also found in relation to what we would call Kundalini latent at the base of the spine center. This is information drawn from other places in the Tibetan's book. The will to survive and to fight for survival is certainly found in the first petal. The colors of Mars are not really in the first petal. The second petal has the color rose and blue. Well, rose certainly can be related to Mars, but a higher type of Mars. Can the color orange be related to Mars? Well, it is an orange planet, interestingly enough, orangish-red. And it rules the five senses, and it rules the concrete mind, whose number is five. So there's a strong five connected with Mars, and hence the possibility of its connection with orange, which is the color of the fifth ray. As to its connection with blue, well, maybe in terms of a great idealism, a higher type of Mars. So we will find this as emotion begins to grow in the second petal, even though later in that petal, love begins to take the place of emotion. Mars is a planet of instinct, and certainly the instinctual life is ruling, physical instinctual life is ruling strongly in the first petal. It continues to rule in the second petal, but emotional response is growing. And when we look at the third petal, it's a petal of sacrifice. And the sacrifice involved is often sacrifice experienced in combat or in war. Mars would naturally be found. He's going to be found in the eighth petal, particularly, and maybe in the ninth petal from a certain hierarchical point of view when the third initiation is being taken. And there are other rulers of the petals which will bring Mars into the picture. Certainly the first petal, if we consider it to be ruled by Aries, starting the 12-fold zodiacal series for all the petals, then Mars will be prominent. It's early days, and Mars is the exoteric ruler of Aries. So the sixth ray of devotion, it may show somewhat, but the Martian quality itself, in terms of fighting for survival, will show a great deal. The solar plexus center probably will not be so activated in the first petal, but by the time we reach the second petal and sustained into the third, it will be. As for the sacral center, it's definitely there. And of course, it's operating in a stimulated manner, even in modern man. The sacral center is going to be prominent in the first petal, certainly, most prominent, and continuing on in the second petal. Sometimes love may rise above the tendency of the sacral center, but often love will be expressed through the form and thus through the sacral center. You can kind of see that the sixth ray of Mars would relate to the sixth center, the sacral center. You can combine these centers according to their number, and you have some interesting results. But anyway, Mars and the sacral center are related, but so is Uranus. This is surprising, except that it's a planet of precipitation and is involved in the creation of form, largely through the forms of the etheric body, which Uranus does rule. And those etheric forms will have around them the densification produced by the aggregation of matter of the lower kind. So inasmuch as the seventh ray is needed for precipitation and the sacral center is involved in the precipitation of forms, it is appropriate in relation to the sacral center. In a way, it could be considered the moon in this instance veiling Uranus. The moon is also the mother of the forms, and the sacral center is the center which, in combination with another, will produce the forms by which procreation or perpetuation of the race is achieved. And of course, it's working in the animal kingdom very strongly. The specialized study of how these chakras are coming to birth in the animal kingdom is probably of great interest, but beyond our ability and not the major focus of our interest either. So in terms of looking at the egoic lotus, the seventh ray will definitely be involved in the first petal, where the procreation of forms is the major objective. We look at the second grouping of human souls, and it said somewhere that their function was largely to provide forms for others of their kind. So eat, sleep, procreate, and just give man the opportunity to be on the earth long enough to learn a few things through repeated cyclic exposure. We do see in the first petal the violet color, and that's going to tell us about the presence of the seventh ray. And the seventh ray mediator or the transmitter of the seventh ray is Uranus. There are probably other seventh ray planets. Jupiter certainly has a strong seventh ray, and there are probably lesser planets with that seventh ray. We have yet to discover and name all these. Okay. So that would be the sacral center and Uranus found in the first petal. Not a very high Uranus, of course. More that which precipitates from the etheric body into the physical. And we know that some of the early Lemurian requirements are a type of initiation which relates the etheric body to the physical. And when we're looking at that first petal, it really is the Lemurian petal. And so its unfoldment can be thought of as having occurred over probably 10, 16, 17 million years. Let's just say 10 million years for the unfoldment of that first petal. That takes us into the early Atlantean days when attention will be given to the second petal. So we can see a very, very slow process, and we can really see the means by which the hierarchy can assess who they're dealing with when it comes to humanity. Large groups have to be considered, and the welfare of large groups and not just the welfare of individuals. As for the base of the spine, as stated, first ray, the sustaining power of the personal will, the will to survive upon the physical plane and to eliminate that which stands in the way of survival. Of course, we're also dealing with average man here. Will Pluto be found in the third petal of sacrifice? Probably, because it's there that one has to give up so much to achieve the goal that one has or the goal that is forced upon one. And Pluto is the eliminator, and so is the first ray, and makes it possible to push to the side, to eliminate, to overcome, to kill, to disperse, vanquish, you know, all of those enemies that stand in the way of what one desires. Of course, it also can be the planet which eliminates one's lower self as one strives to do what one must and still survive. Death is often the result, and Pluto is the planet of death. And yet, of course, of the Kundalini power and of healing and of a kind of life through the release of that Kundalini power. I mean, if it's the healer, it can't only be bringing death. And as D.K. tells us, it never brings death to the consciousness. For the average man, if he were fighting it out in the fifth petal, he's not really average, as I say. Pluto would be involved in that battle. Pluto is the ruler of Scorpio, which I have assigned from one way of numbering, according to the elements. The tiers are numbered according to the elements, like earth for the knowledge tier, water for the love tier, fire for the mind tier, and for the tier of synthesis, it would be air. So Pluto would be the ruler of Scorpio and would have to do with the struggles occurring in the fifth petal. It just depends on what we mean by average man, because the fifth petal is the pivot petal, and average man with his the higher type of average man with his integrating personality is going through many struggles in which we might say Pluto is involved. Pluto can also be involved as we move from one cross to another. And as we move from the mutable cross to the fixed cross, Pluto severs the connection of our consciousness to the lower cross. But then that would take us beyond being average man, wouldn't it? Because average man is not ready to move on to the mutable the fixed cross at the first initiation. So this is pretty much about survival and putting to death the things that are antagonistic to one's survival, and being eliminated oneself in one's lower form if overcome by those forces. Well, he's making big generalizations here, just say average man. What is average man? Well, you know, average man is not the most primitive man. Maybe average man is coming in that fifth human group, and also in the third level of adaptation. We remember the selfish man who was getting along with others just because it was to his advantage to do so. And then came even more selfishness in the fourth stage of adaptation. But finally, there was, at the end of it all, the allowing of the desires and comforts of others and trying not to interfere with them while holding on steadfastly to one's own. Wherever there has to be an elimination, Pluto will be found, and there are certain points in the egoic lotus where eliminations do occur. The first petal, that's good, the first petal, the fifth petal, and the eighth petal, the ninth petal. Eliminations occur in the fifth petal, because one is now ready to follow a higher self. So one is cutting the threads to lower preoccupations. Petal number 8 and 9 are just full of sacrifice. And Pluto, as it does rule not only Scorpio but Pisces, is officiating over the act of sacrifice, where we cut and relinquish that which is no longer needed for higher development. If we go now to take the jump to disciples and initiates, you know, maybe aspirants are still considered to be the higher end of average man in this case. But this is disciples and initiates, and maybe we are going to have to use the first tabulation when we're dealing with aspirants, the higher end of average man. Those who are just reaching towards the possibility of stabilizing themselves as disciples. Well, here, instead of Pluto, we have Vulcan. And this is all about control. Vulcan is a first-rate planet in its soul nature, apparently, just the way I would say that the non-sacred planets are revealed in their personality nature. So the first ray of Pluto may well be the first ray personality. But with Vulcan, a sacred planet, it is the soul rays that are primarily discussed. And so that first ray will involve soul control from the head center. Where will we find this? Well, we will find this increasingly from the first initiation on to the third. And the head center becomes important in terms of the sacrifice petals. Just like we could say generically that the heart center becomes important in relation to the love petals, and the throat center generically in relation to the knowledge petals. So specifically, with the head coming into control, well, you know, anywhere from the fifth petal onward, Vulcan and the sun are one, it is said. And Vulcan is expressing the will of the soul, the will of the solar angel, which begins to become dominant at the fifth petal. So all the way through the later petals, the head center is growing in power, and it's certainly going to be prominent at the ninth petal, which signals the third initiation, and Vulcan is so important at that initiation, and the seven head centers, which are ruled by Vulcan, come into full control by that time. We remember when we studied the different triangles that there were four head centers with their synthesis, the Alta Major Center, which were characterizing spiritual man or advanced man up to the stage of spiritual man, up to the stage of the first initiation. But once the first initiation was passed, the other head centers began growing in power. So that probably the sixth head center, whatever they are and wherever they are, there's some ambiguity there, would be associated with the second initiation, and the seventh head center associated with the third initiation. So this would involve the petals of the yogic lotus from the time of the fifth on, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, a growing head center power. I can't say that at the third initiation with the ninth petal it has reached its apotheosis and is as powerful as it will be. We'd have to wait for still higher initiations for that power to demonstrate as a radiance and even beyond the presence of the causal body. We would have to wait until the causal body was no more for the fullest expression of the head center, even if it did occur in a Maya Virupa. So Vulcan is fittingly associated with the head. Its first ray brings that. It's the downward pointing arrow. It says something to us about control from the head of the other chakras, and that is one of the goals of initiation. The command and control center is in the head, and in a way it's around the pineal gland. I wonder if we can say that that etheric area and the gland are closely allied to Vulcan. I think we can say that. It impresses from above. The Ajna center here is the same, has the same fifth ray Venusian ruler as for the average man, but we're dealing now with the one who is taking initiation. So we're dealing especially with the third initiation, at which time the fifth ray is the dominant ray, and thus Venus at the Ajna is very important. Of course, we've had Mercury moving in as well, and Mercury, I suppose, the more the man is related to the spiritual triad, especially the Buddhic and Atmic levels, Mercury will be found. But at least as far as the third initiation goes, Venus is still powerful with its fifth ray, and so we're going to want to look for that Ajna center demonstration at the ninth petal. We cannot deny the growing power of Venus even in the eighth and the seventh petal as the probationary initiate stages move along. Interesting about the ninth petal, it does carry the color indigo. It's interesting that Libra, which is a sign much associated with Venus, is given the color indigo. And I think we can consider Venus not only rose in color, not only should we say orange in color, which the planet actually appears to be under the telescope, but occultly indigo. It's associated with the note La, Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La, which is an A, and is considered to be the indigo note. So Venus does have place at the ninth petal, where the expression of the solar angel results in what we call usually the soul-infused personality. Some further infusion is of course possible, but by that time the majority rules, and the sort of three three over two majority exists, and that three over two indicates the fifth in music, which is the second ray and associated with the essential nature of Venus, which is the second ray. It's often a harmonizing type of interval. When things are out of tune, play the fifth, and the other notes seem to come into harmonic relation quite quickly. So the Ajna center then is more than simply the center of personality integration. which we would say is occurring in the lower fifth petal, we would say that increasingly the solar angel is taking over. Venus is going to be important at the seventh petal also, because it's there that work is done prior to the first initiation, and there's a lot about Libra in relation to the first initiation. And Libra is that seventh petal, which is ruled by Venus, and it has to do with the accumulation of knowledge and the use of knowledge. So Venus is important there. Venus falls in relation to Scorpio and thus the eighth petal, but that will mean that the solar angel, in a way, descends into hell and attempts to redeem what it finds there. So Christ as Venus is descending into hell, and each one of us in our Christ aspect is descending into hell and redeeming and learning how to relinquish what is not important. The death-dealing quality is there with Venus-Pluto. With the heart center, it's Jupiter now. The sun may have been veiling a non-sacred second-ray planet over here. There are just the sun is not considered a sacred planet, but in a way it's much, much more than that. It's a star, of course. It's the representative of the solar logos, and it's far beyond in status and power any of the other planets. But it's a blind here, veiling a non-sacred second-ray planet. When it comes to the rulership of the heart center, we really have the stimulation of the love and inclusion aspect, which begins at the fifth petal, and well, it's even going to characterize the synthesis petals. Petals of synthesis are derivative from Bodhi. A downflow of Bodhi created them. And so Bodhi, when you think about the aspect of divinity that's connected with it, it's the second aspect of divinity. The sixth principle, the second aspect of divinity, the fourth plane. It's a really a 2-4-6 kind of location. And so Jupiter is the heart in terms of the birth of the Christ in the heart from the time of the fifth petal, and moves on, interestingly, to the Sagittarian petal, which from one perspective is the ninth petal. And so that full flowering of all nine petals of the lotus is related to Jupiter. Jupiter is so inclusive that it will have many many factors involved in it. It's involved with blue, it's involved with indigo, it's not involved with rose, interestingly enough. But here we have in the ninth petal both blue and indigo. These are Jupiterian in nature, and we have in the eighth petal blue. So in those two petals particularly, we can expect to see that the lotus is really unfolding. And of course, as love becomes more dominant at the fifth petal, it's possible that Jupiter should be considered. We go from love of self, love of one's own ego, to a more inclusive love position. That even began to happen in the second petal, where love began to come into the ascendancy. So wherever I see this blue, I think of Jupiter, but I also think of it in relation to indigo, and I think of Venus as well in relation to indigo. So wherever indigo is showing up, the Jupiter-Venus expression is, I think, strong. Okay, so that's the heart, and it's bringing the solar angels and their benevolent guidance into expression. And so from the fifth petal on, we have to begin considering Jupiter strongly. The solar plexus center and the sixth ray, it's the upward striving solar plexus center. If Mars rules the lower point in the solar plexus center, then Neptune in a way rules the upper. Another way to look at that is Earth rules the lower point in the solar plexus center on a larger scale, and Venus rules the upper point. We can relate Venus actually to the solar plexus of the solar logos. and Neptune to still higher centers. But anyway, the lower part of Neptune is here expressing, maybe I shouldn't call it the lower part. It is the soul ray of Neptune, and it has to do with a strong aspiration. And where does that aspiration really begin? Well, we're going to find it in the second petal, where man can be swept by the religious instinct. It may quiet down again in the third petal. I was beginning to think how people with a religious orientation sometimes undergo some lives of mental training, and the religious orientation dies down and they become skeptics. So Neptune is much more connected with the second petal, and definitely with the fourth, because it's the ruler of Cancer, which in the sequence rules the fourth petal. And there man is beginning to strive to come into relation with his own higher power. Neptune is the longing for that. He's longing to become that higher power. It may not be actually understood technically by the man in those exact terms, but that's what's going to happen. Personality integration is happening, and a striving towards one's higher self by whatever means, and really being illuminated by that higher self in the fifth petal. And remember that Leo, ruling the fifth petal, is esoterically ruled by the sun veiling Neptune. So that longing does not stop. Neptune has its place in petals number 4, 5, and 6, because Virgo, with the esoteric ruler of the moon, that moon is veiling Neptune again. So in all of those petals, 4, 5, and 6, Neptune has a prominent place. And it's not the desire for just anything. Well, you know, I suppose we could say it's the wish life, you know, of the human race. But Mars has a lot to do with fulfilling the lower six rays desires. I want what's lower. I want what's on my own level. Neptune usually wants what's higher. Neptune has a tendency to rise. So, it's very prominent in the love tier. And then by the time we get to the synthesis tier, which is Buddhic, Neptune again has a very strong fusing role to play, because the factor of fusion is necessary in synthesis and the elimination of artificial boundaries, and that's exactly what Neptune does. And maybe it does it more under the second ray up in that area, but you know, we cannot so easily separate the second and sixth ray. They're pretty much part of each other. And remember, the sixth principle is operative in Buddhi and will be operative in the synthesis petals. The sacral center, well, again, it's Uranus, isn't it? But more Uranus now in terms of transferring the energy to the throat than it is the moon or Mars or even the Earth, the production of forms. So the seventh ray here does at some point begin to rule the throat center. How interesting that it does that. And Uranus is involved in the sacral center, but especially for advanced man in the needed transfer to the throat center, which occurs at the first initiation, which is ruled by the seventh ray, which is Uranus. So we see it in a way much more fitting, in my view anyway, in relation to the esoteric planets, and I see other planets which could be ruling the sacral center along with Uranus for the average human being. So the ability to create forms which are in line with the archetype will occur when the sacral center can move to the throat center. And the sacral center here will be perhaps more under control, except if you're passing through a particular period like we are, where, you know, the seventh ray is coming in so strongly, people can't really control it, and they have all kinds of ambiguity about their which sex they are, you know, and all kinds of desire to break free from some kind of imposed mold and be whatever sex they want. That's so Uranian in relation to the seventh ray and the sacral center. But the sacral center comes under better control and is meant to produce those forms deliberately and purposefully. Remember, Uranus also rules the purposeful head center, not just producing children just to produce them out of almost out of fear, so that they will take care of you in your later days. I guess in certain countries it's certainly understandable. But a deliberate production of forms bringing souls into incarnation in a very purposeful way, having the soul in mind. The base of the spine center is again ruled by Pluto, and we will find the vitalizing power of the first ray rising with the Kundalini as the initiate gains in strength. There's also a sense in which we could put Uranus and the seventh ray at the base of the spine, and also Mercury is there, representing Kundalini active and rising to the rising like the Caduceus up towards the higher centers. It's not Mars, it's not Earth, it's Mercury, interestingly, with its fourth ray uniting through that fourth ray the higher and the lower. So I hope that gives us a bit of a I think a bit of understanding about how these can be related. When we talk about that sacral center, you know, we're for the average man, it's not just the second petal that's going to be involved. The sacral center will continue as the home of the mental elemental. It will promote the scientific mind, which is Uranus, interestingly enough. So Uranus has to be related to the mental elemental. And increasingly it comes under the control of the soul. The base of the spine, of course, is going to be active even when we think about the head center and the third initiation. The base of the spine, the rising of the Kundalini, starting really in earnest at the third initiation and continuing in ever greater power in succeeding initiations up to the fifth. As far as the sixth initiation goes, if one has a Maya Varupa through that, I'm not exactly sure how the base of the spine is operative. Maybe it has lifted all that it has to lift by that point. So he says the two of these rays must be added in both groups of human beings, the fourth ray, which governs humanity itself as a center in the body of the planetary logos, either a throat center, an ajna center connected with the fourth ray, yes, sometimes considered a kind of a solar plexus center, but that would be the lower forms of human beings, I suppose. Thus bringing all the ray influences into a sevenfold stream of energy, playing upon the lower self in the three worlds, or upon those who are entering into or are a part of the fifth kingdom in nature, and those would be your disciples and initiates. And we cannot entirely eliminate the fourth ray and just speak of it in a generic sense as simply pertaining to humanity, because, as I said, at the base of the spine it is sometimes listed. At the ajna center, it is sometimes listed in connection with Mercury. So in those two places particularly, the fourth ray can show up as the ruler of a center. Intensifying the problem for humanity as a whole is the problem of the individual within that whole. And we're in a very Leo time when the problem of the individual and the integrated personality is prominent. To the influences to which he is subjected as an individual, through his past and his own peculiar horoscope. His past is conditioning, isn't it? And to those in which he shares as a part of the fourth kingdom, influences in nature, must be added the effects of his two major rays, personal and egoic. It's such a combination of ray energies, isn't it? We really have to hold in our hands so many threads of energies. We have to be, in a sense, the weaver. The adept is the weaver. He is the one for whom there is a great triumph of the third ray. And I'm remembering that the power of the third logos is active at the fifth initiation, when the man becomes the adept, and can weave together all these many energies in a creative manner in the three lower worlds. So many energies to combine here, And the combination of these energies make us what we are, and we have to discriminate between them and learn how to fuse them in a lawful manner, lawful as we are being creative with them according to the patterns that are supposed to be manifest because of the divine plan. These indicate his type of mechanism and his soul quality. The personality, his mechanism, and the soul quality is the egoic ray. It must not be forgotten either that his seven centers are in close relation to the planetary centers, which, and they are ruling ruled by certain rays. I've discussed them, elaborated upon them when I was working in the esoteric astrology book, and you can find that in the second part of the book. He does deal with the planetary centers, and that he is conditioned not only by the centers of his own nature and their rays, but also by the centers found within the human kingdom, and also by the planetary centers. So different groups within the human kingdom represent different types of rays. Maybe the new group of world servers can be considered the heart center within the planet, within the human kingdom. Maybe even though the Ajna Center is the new group of world servers within the body of Sanakumara, perhaps it's more related to the heart within the human kingdom itself. Perhaps those who are the initiates have to be considered the head center of the human kingdom, and those who are the intellectuals have to be considered the throat center of the human kingdom, and those who are aspiring the solar plexus center. And so, you see, we can look at the human kingdom and think of the different types of human beings that will be found. Now, maybe somewhere this information is found, but there are all these different kinds of human beings, as we have seen, from the 10 soul groups or the 10 human groups. And they could all, or different ones of these groups, could represent different chakras. I suppose that the average, good, nice man, et cetera, represents something of the solar plexus, or at least the lower solar plexus of the human kingdom. That the more natural people found in the natural state maybe represent more the sacral center. And maybe not just confined to them either. And the base of the spine, who is upholding this whole thing? Who is to be found at the base of the spine? Are the Aboriginal people to be found there in terms of the sustaining function? They seem in their lore to have the idea that they are have a function necessary to uphold within the economy of the earth. And maybe that their function is now completed. When we look at the base of the spine, will we also find people of very powerful will there, even though it's one of the lower centers of a powerful personal will? Well, how we would assign human beings to the different chakras of humanity could be most interesting discussion. Some places he talks about cells within the brain, and he assigns different aspects, different types of human beings, and gives them an equation as a different type of cell. Okay, well, we're a little bit over the hour, indeed we are, but we have explored the rulerships of the chakras of the individual according to the planet and the ray of that planet. It's not an exhaustive list. You know, as I said, Mercury can be found at the Ajna Center and Uranus at the top of the head, and the seventh ray can be found at the throat center, so is Uranus involved there? There are different assignments we can make even as the man moves on along the path. Neptune may be found here at the solar plexus center, but it's got a strong connection with the heart and buddhi, and it also could be closely connected with the heart within the head. But don't forget that Vulcan, interestingly, is said to connect with the heart of the sun, and so The heart within the head center is like that which picks up resonance with the heart of the sun. There are different ways of connecting planets and rays to the different centers depending upon the different stages of evolution. But probably that is enough, and you know, we're kind of in the realm of astrology here for a little while. And so I'm just going to, yeah, we're going to talk about astrology and the initiations and so forth. All of this, remember, is preliminary material, which we should have in order to make the synthesis of knowledge which is required to fully understand the egoic lotus and the areas of life that it touches. So this is the end of program 15, and it's about going to be about an hour and 5 minutes or so, maybe a little bit more. 1 hour and let's say 6 minutes. I hope it can be fit into some conventional time slot. And we'll and it's on. It was on Esoteric Astrology page 517 and 518 that we had this. And then we're going to move on to yet another. I never know which one it's going to be. I have to kind of think about it, kind of find it. We'll move on to program number 16. And we'll see whether it's going to be in Raised in the Initiations or in Esoteric Astrology or in what. So, okay, everybody, I think there's a lot to think about here. And as I, you know, flash back on the picture of the egoic lotus and try to relate the material that we're talking about to this picture, I hope you can follow it. And if you can't follow all of it, that's okay, because gradually, all of these Mercurian connections do come into focus, and they do become meaningful, literally meaningful, full of meaning, and we will see what we have not seen before. Okay, so farewell for the moment. See you shortly.